for you.
They stop at a certain point. They stop.
How long ago was this done?
Last year.
And it's been accepted?
Yeah. It depends by who.
And why is it necessary that people can't walk?
Because the village is spread out. And for some people, it's a 20-minute walk or 50-minute
walk.
So the buses run, has nothing to do with the shul. The buses run as far as the village is concerned.
Wow.
I can bring you the literature if you want it.
Bring the literature, fine.
I don't have all the shalos anymore with the shalos and shulos.
I can't believe the Rev would be happy with that. I know that Rabbi Riskin thought of something like that in the 70s, and it was shouted down very loud and clear.
I know you spoke.
On the other hand,
you
in Hong Kong, they had an escalator.
No, an escalator is a different story. Yeah. Escalator is a very, very different story.
Yeah.
I've been on that escalator. It's really something... Something amazing.
And everybody uses it. Even
okay. I see Jack is not here. Yitzchak is not here. They leave me questions on my phone, and I'm ready to answer. And all right, let's begin. We have a world to do, and exciting. First of all, today is Monday morning, September 9th, 2019. A big hello to the students in front of me and to the many, many more listening across the wide expanse of Jewish existence on this universe. Just to follow up on yesterday's share for 1 minute, Yitz Rubin didn't sleep well at night because he's all upset that the major source for permitting inviting someone to your house on Friday night who's going to drive, I showed yesterday it's based upon the Shulchan Aruch, based upon our Shulchan Aruch, based upon the Chabad Shulchan Aruch, and it goes back to real cases, and it's very sad that if they tell you on Shabbos your daughter has been kidnapped by the Christians to be raised as a Christian, you're to do everything possible to Chalel Shabbat run after, and if you don't want to be Mechalel Shabbat, the Beit Din kicks you and forces you. And that source is based upon the Gemara in Yuma and the Gemara in Shabbos. Tov she'chalalu Shabbat kedei she'yishmeru habei Shabbatot. And that's the source, and that's the whole concept of outreach. Let them be mechalal Shabbos now, but if we inspire them, they'll be shomer mitzvah forever. So I'm telling Rabbi Rubin, it's a principle that's established. You don't have to lose sleep and make an argument that someone becoming a Christian is a lot worse than someone being Mechalel Shabbos. We're not dealing here with levels of sin. We're dealing here with the principle. Tov she'chalalu Shabbat achad. That's one. Two, Jack Levinstein evidently came up in the middle of the night with the thought that in every Jew there's a little Chabad. Listen, Chabad is not a different religion. We're all part of the same religion, and it's all part of what I referred to yesterday, that the world cannot understand us because we have a dual existence. Bernie Sanders does not have a dual existence. Bernie Sanders lives like a guy, except he doesn't believe in Jesus, and maybe on Yom Kippur he goes to a temple. But a Jew who lives like a Jew, we're Jews individual as individuals, and we're Jews as part of the community. I don't have time now to go further. I can spend the next 2 hours giving the Divrei Torah, Korban Pesach, etc., joining together, mutual responsibility. And this is what Eretz Yisrael is all about. Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Al Pi Torah Yisrael. It's the individual and the community. So what I said in class, I have to thank my Talmud Rabbi Grunstein, sent me from Musaf LeShabbat. I don't know which paper this is from, but it's Sivan Rahav Meir from last Friday, and let's see if I can make out what paper this is. No, it's Sivan Rahav Meir Musaf LeShabbat. It could either be. I have a feeling this is it's Yisrael Hayom. So She's interviewing, I think you all know, Sivan Rahab Meir. Do you know who I'm talking about, first of all? Have you ever gone to hear her at Heichal Shlomo? I once went with my wife to hear her. Inspiring, inspiring. Malaya Ugadusha, a very bright lady. It seems she came from a Chiluni home. And in high school, on her own, she became frum. I mean, you gotta give credit. No one reached out to her. All on her own, and she's very bright. I think she graduated college before she went into the army. If I'm not mistaken, you can correct me, but I think at the age of 16 or 17, she had a bachelor's, and then she went further. And she's married to a wonderful individual. If you know, his brother is a fabulous chazan, the Meir brothers. So she is now in America for the year. The Mizrahi is trying to revitalize itself. Mizrahi has a big problem. It's the same problem that Chabad has. When a Chabad shaluach succeeds, he loses. And this was told to me by many Chabad shaluchim. I quote the one in California. He built a tremendous shul. He has never yet had a minyan of Shomrei Shabbos. The minyan makes someone Shomrei Shabbos. Either they move to the small land of Israel in 770 Eastern Parkway, or the real land of Israel, where we're sitting. So whenever they win, they lose. So Mizrahi has the same problem. Mizrahi is the greatest success story of the modern age. Zionism, Mizrahi, the greatest success story. It's beyond belief what we have accomplished. We're sitting here, the most powerful army in the world. There's more Torah learning going on here than ever before in the history of the Jewish people. More kolel and more sfarim being published. The land being conquered. My grandson moving last week to getting the key to a house. A new Dalet Amot Beretz Yisrael. I have two grandsons. One moved to Leshem now. One moved to Kedem. Kanayin Hara. But Mizrahi loses out. Why? Because whenever they succeed, there's a family in Denver. Finally, they got one member of the family to wake up and come in Aliyah. So the community, Chaim, loses a terrific individual. You understand what I'm saying? Take a look at the great Mizrahites. Take a look at Bnei Akiva. Bnei Akiva gave the state of Israel its greatest gifts. Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, no? Next door is Chorev High School for Girls. Reb Shlomo Merzel, Zichronim Tzadikim Levracha. He built it from the ground. Where's Shlomo Merzel from? Chicago. Where's his wife from? Boston. What do you want? Mizrahi succeeds, it loses. So now they're trying to revitalize it. What does it mean? I don't know what it means, because within a year, when you have success and you wake them up that they're Jewish, people from Flatbush are going to wake up that they're Jewish, they're going to come in Aliyah. There are no two ways about it. So she's in America for the year teaching at Stern College. So she's meeting with this lady, a lady named Barry Weiss. Barry Weiss, like my wife says, we live in a world where it's unisex. The name's already, I have great grandchildren, I don't know whether, here, Carmel, boy or girl, take a guess. Yuval, boy or girl. They're both girls. To me, Carmel should be Carmela, Yuval, Yuvala, we call it Yuvali, Baruch Hashem. I have a nephew Yuval, and a great grandson Yuval. So she's meeting with this lady who works for the New York Times and is putting out a book on anti-Semitism, how she can't believe what's happening in America. And I take a look at the interview. She's quoting Rakefet that the world can't understand us. We have a dual existence on a private level and on a public level. We are Jews. All right? Enough being said. A dual Kedusha. Our individualistic Kedusha that we paint, uvecha b'cha Hashem, that's in relation to our bechira. So God, panim el panim, the pasuk in Mishlei. Then there's ki am kadosh atal Hashem elokecha. Eli, you were born with innate kedusha. You understand? That you can't throw away. That's what we say, Yisrael afa pisha chata Yisrael. You can get rid of all the individualistic kedusha lo aleinu. But the basis of your Jewish identity, remains with you. And our job is to spark it. And that's what Jack Levinstein said. All of us are Chabad. It's not that we're Chabad. Chabad are Jews, and Jews are Chabad on that level. All right. Some of us don't learn Tanya. Some of us don't learn Likud Torah. Some of us perhaps don't open up. Yesterday I opened up the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, and I show you the difference, the nuances between the way the Alter Rebbe quotes the Halacha and the way the Shulchan Aruch. But we're all part of the same Am Yisrael. Now, let's come back to Rabbi Joseph Lichtenstein. Very fascinating. I'll explain who he was, where he was different, and the influence. And those of you who knew who I'm talking about or know what is being said about him, within minutes you will understand where he's coming from. But I just want to add one more word about last week. Let me see if I have the paper here. Again, here it is, Baruch Hashem. We spoke last week, and again, Rabbi Goldstein, we spoke about Clarence, Rabbi Goldstein, and we spoke about Clarence Lieberman, and I checked out Clarence Lieberman wound up in Baltimore. I don't know if they're descendants. I don't know if they had children or not, married from, lived in Baltimore. And I made the point that Rabbi Goldstein was the Rabbi Rishkin of his generation. What I read to you, the description of Clarence riding on a white horse and the crowd following him. And I said, only Rabbi Rishkin could be capable of this like Rabbi Goldstein. And I told you the story of the wedding of Ilana Rishkin, where Rabbi Steve Rishkin and his son-in-law, and how did my son-in-law know this was the girl for him, and how did she know this was the boy, that they both loved the song, Asukala Akleinim. And at the wedding, under the chuppah, the chatan in his kittel, and Rabbi Rishkin is he might have been wearing a kittel too. Rishkin is capable of anything. He wears a bekeshah and Shabbos. Do you know that or not? And he may have had a kittel, but he certainly had a talis under the chuppah. That I remember. And they did aksukala akleinim two actors. So Charlie, you went home. You told it to some yekis. They said, Rakepit is making it up. Can't be. Impossible. My dear students, I got the following email. This is from Rabbi Grunstein. Dear Rebbe, etc. I have sent the recording of Monday Shir to Rabbi Rishkin's daughter, Ilana Feder, who wrote back, quote, "Hi, thank you so much for sending that to me. I enjoyed every minute of listening. Forgot how genius and witty Rabbi Rakefit is. He still doesn't miss a beat. And the wedding reference was heartwarming to hear and accurate." So Charlie, please tell those yekis that at times there are things in life that are very funny. I didn't say Rabbi Yosef Breuer did it. Then you would have a problem. But Rabbi Steve Rishkin, Rabbi Irvin Goldstein. Now, Rabbi Lichtenstein, as we said, let me just pick up where I left off last week. Rabbi Joseph H. Lichtenstein, let me once again give you his years, 1902-1979. Born in Europe, came to America about 8 years old. And basically, he had very little memories of Europe. He is an American product. All right. He went to Reitz. He was a good student, came from a Hasidic background, actually, and married the right girl. When we speak about marrying the right girl, so after class, a lot of people brought me other examples. But I'm talking in terms that it's the right girl in the sense you can inherit the empire. He married Gertrude Schlang, who was the granddaughter of Rabbi Margolius. Now, I knew her personally, a very brilliant woman. Also, not very tall. It was a very interesting couple to look at them. And a couple that, Baruch Hashem, beautiful marriage that lasted until death do we part. And Rabbi Herbert, Rabbi Lichtenstein, his education, at that time there was no yeshiva college yet. He went to CCNY, then he had a master's from Columbia. I believe he took all the courses towards his doctorate, but he never wrote the dissertation. And I've had other rabbis tell me that. I remember Rabbi Lewittis, he had honorary doctorates. Joe Lickstein had honorary doctorates, but they never completed their coursework, and that brings me back to the woman I owe so much to. She ran, I write about her in Washington, she ran Bernard Revel Graduate School, and she said to me, "Arnold, you're finishing your courses, but you better get started on your thesis or you'll never get your doctorate like all the other rabbis who get too busy." And there's a lot of truth to that. So he never really had a doctorate, but this man was very broad. Education was his thrust. He had a very deep understanding of the American scene and how to act within the American scene. But here, who was a very big influence on him? And this is where we come to his grandfather-in-law. He married the right girl, but you have to have the ability. And Rabbi Margolis took him into Kehilat Jeshurun. At a very early stage, he became the assistant rabbi, or what you would call today the associate rabbi. Originally, Rabbi Margolis Ramaz, and let me give you his years, 1851 to 1936. Rabbi Margolis was already in Europe. People told stories about mitzvim, miracles that he performed. Talmud Chacham from the old school, also Hasidic background, came to Boston in the early 1900s, and from the Boston area, he later was brought to Kehilat Jeshurun. These Balabatim on the Upper East Side were all successful. He came to a shul that was not a Lower East Side shul. These were not schnurrers. These were people who made it on the American scene. Many made it in real estate. Many made it in businesses, stores, retail, wholesale, Seventh Avenue, the garment industry, and they wanted a rabbi like Rabbi Margolis. There was never a question here about the shul not being orthodox. It was founded to be orthodox. Many of the leading balabatim were Shema Torah and Mitzvot. These were people who succeeded in America and didn't throw their Yiddishkeit away. Now, when Ramaz began, he spoke only Yiddish. He had knowledge of English, obviously. He wasn't living in America. He's not speaking. He has a good mind. But he never was at home preaching in English. And that I saw with my own eyes. You can take, for the sake of argument, Reb Lazer Silva. So I tell a story in Washington about Reb Lazer Silva, which are my own eyes, my own ears. Reb Lazer already was a chevroman, was a character, was a gonad deer, an Ilya Shekhov. The Rav had tremendous derech eretz for him. And in 1960s, the mid-60s, 63, 64, maybe 60, as late as 65, I don't think later, maybe the exact year in Washington. So Lamshi Yeshiva wanted to raise money for the branch in Petach Tikva. It was once a very important yeshiva in Petach Tikva called Lamshi Yeshiva. Before Panovich conquered the Litvish world, that yeshiva and Chevron were the two most important Litvish yeshiva. Today there's still something there, but it's not one of the main players in the Lithuanian world on the Israeli scene. So to raise funds, they wanted to attract right-wingers and centrists and left-wingers, whatever name you want to call it today. So they had two guest speakers. One guest speaker was Mendy Rachman. That represents the enlightened YU crowd. And one guest speaker was Reb Lazer Silva, representing the more right-wing crowd. So Rabbi Rachman speaks first. And then Reb Lazer Silva gets up, and Reb Lazer Silva gets up. I quote him word by word. "If the son of my good friend, Rabbi David Rachman, can speak in English, so can I." And he goes on to give a pilpul for 20 minutes. He's in English. But when he reaches a crescendo, he breaks into Yiddish. You could see he couldn't go further in English. Yiddish was his native Torah language. Chaim, when did we see that again? Were you here? I was in 1992. You can correct me with the years, those of you who were here. remember the big conference where Peres wanted to sell out the whole state of Israel, and he had these people supporting him and those people supporting him, and everything hinged on Rav Shach, remember? And this big stadium, where is it, in Tel Aviv, what do they call it, Steliyahu, what's it called, give me the name.
Change
the name all the time. It's in that area. You know what I'm talking
about.
Staleo. So it's the neighborhood. So thousands of people, the news, the Israeli news, and Rav Shach gets up to speak. I recorded it. I had to throw it out because it's on a video, and who can play a video today? And Rav Shach gets up to speak, and he's speaking Hebrew, as I was challenged yesterday in class that I have no right to say. You can only study Torah in Yiddish. Rav Shach, the Chazon Ish disagrees. Remember, I was challenged yesterday, so I shot back. Chazon Ish is not the only one. Rav Shach also disagrees. So he begins in Hebrew, what was once the home and the father and the mother and Shabbos. And then he starts to cry and he breaks into Yiddish. So you see, these people, they knew Hebrew, they knew English, but they were at home in Yiddish. And at a very early stage, Ramaz already brings in Mordechai Kaplan, Herbert S. Goldstein, and then his grandson-in-law. Now, Ramaz already was different. He was not the typical mold of what we'll use popular terminology, although this word didn't exist then, he was not the typical mold of the Haredi world. Now, what am I talking about? Okay. And here I want to quote from an article by Professor Jeffrey Gurek. Jeffrey Gurek, maybe some of you recognize the name. He's the person who succeeded my professor, Hyman Grinstein, at Yeshiva University. He's the professor of American Jewish history. He's, some people say he's more of a sportsman than a historian. There's truth to that, too. He was a coach, I think, of the high school basketball team. You can check it out and let me know. But he did specialize in some of his publications about the Jews in sports in the United States. So he has a right to be professor of American Jewish history, also including not only about Rabbanim, but about Jews in sports, etc. Now, he did a beautiful article which appeared in the American Jewish Archives, November 1983, Registers and Accommodators, Varieties of Orthodox Rabbis in America, 1886 through 1983. And here let me tell you about a very interesting experiment. I'm going to speak about it from Gurek's article, then I'm going to come to the doctoral dissertation on it. What was happening in New York, let's go back to my lectures about 7-8 years ago. Remember, we began the year, we began this course of study, began the series, to be more correct. We spoke about RJJ. What was the story with Rabbi Jacob Joseph? The Jews on the east side saw their children are throwing Yiddishkeit away. Hutchins Hapgood, who was not Jewish, was a social worker with a lot of good feeling for Yiddishkeit. He was so, and he wrote a beautiful volume on the Jews on the Lower East Side. And he describes there, he says, the aggravation of the older generation. He tells one story that this gentleman had come home from work, bearded individual, and he says to his son, let's go to Shul Daven Maariv. And the kid says, what you giving me? Remember that, Mark? How much are you paying me to Daven Maariv? And he had to give the kid 2 cents to go with him to Daven Maariv. So, yeah, listen, this is America. It's fading away. So the tragedy of our being Jewish is very simple. The Torah already says it. Am kishei orif hu. It's a tragedy. We have elections a week from tomorrow, believe it or not. So how many parties are vying for our votes? And how many votes will be wasted? I told my grandchildren, thank God everyone swore to me, they're listening to me, I don't have to pay them either. They also concluded, I said, vote just one party for the new right, whatever they call themselves, with all my hesitation. Believe me, I'm firmer than most people in the new right. Everyone describes me as right of center, all right? Right of center. Some people maledict me. You learned in Lakewood, like it's absurd. If someone learned in Lakewood, it's absurd. Fine, you knew Rabbi Aaron Cutler, it's absurd. All right, so I'm happy to accept that. But of course, not everyone is religious. I'm upset, but it's the best we have. This is reality. And don't waste your votes. You have to get, what is it, 3-4%, 3-point-something, whatever. Don't wait. But we Jews, look, Fagelin's a miracle over drugs. He gave up running. He's going to, Baruch Hashem, they're going to legalize, what is it, marijuana or something? Someone's lying to them with the marijuana. Okay. But we're Jews, and each one is smarter than the other. You heard that in class. Was it yesterday? Someone said, shoot the guy. You know, they're arguing. If we start shooting, we'll be like a Yigal Amir, you know? You understand? My father always used to say, Zichrono Livracha, if the Arabs were smart, they would let the Jews alone, never do anything to them, and the Jews would kill each other fighting. So we have to know, rise above it. Now, intelligent people reach this conclusion, but what do you do when you reach the conclusion? So that's where the idea came. We need a chief rabbi. Look at England. England is organized. We can be organized. We need a chief rabbi. And they brought over Rabbi Yaakov Yosef and tried to organize a kehillah. And we all know the results. Tragedy upon tragedy upon tragedy. Rabbi Yaakov Yosef gave a heksha, and within minutes there were other rabbanim who decried his heksha as treif. And they're giving a heksha within minutes. There were other rabbanim who put up signs, Chief Rabbi of the United States and Canada. And when they asked them, who made you Chief Rabbi, remember the answer, the sign painter. And the Yaakov Yosef experiment ended in total disgrace, I would say. Almost total failure. It wasn't total failure, because the seeds remained that there had to be unity. And ultimately, as you recall my lectures, the day of Rabbi Yaakov Yosef's funeral is the day that the Agudas Rabbanim, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis of the United States and Canada, was established. And that was the first organization of Orthodox Rabbanim. And at one time it was a very important, powerful organization. The Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations was established while Rabbi Yaakov Yosef was still alive, 1898. And I need not tell you what the Union has become. It's not just that Dov Zakheim was employed by them, but Dov, their kashrut, their concept of public service has revolutionized our lives. You understand? We can travel all over the world and find kosher food that's reliable and depend upon it. And I've been in parts of the world, Cairns in Australia, go and dream. You can walk into a supermarket there and find products with the OU. It's beyond words what the OU has accomplished. And whatever money they make, I need not tell you what NCSY is and what Yachad is. We have to, it's an unbelievable achievement. Now, in New York City, what's going on with the kashrut and the scandals and how many doctorates have been written about this period and the lack of unity and the rabbanim and the infighting and the reform and the orthodox, it's not yet a conservative movement as we know of it today. So the idea came up, we have to organize a kehillah. And this idea was already broached 1909. By the 1910s, it's a reality. World War I, it's a reality. World War I helped forge the Jews, bring them a little bit together. The suffering in the Jews all over the world. You have the formation in World War I of the Joint Distribution Committee. Three different organizations were raising funds for the Jews in Europe. One was Orthodox, the Center of Relief. One was like Labor Zionist, and one was left wing. And they actually came together to distribute the money through the joint JDC, Joint Distribution Committee. So the idea came up, why can't we have a kehillah in New York? Now, what does this mean to have a kehillah in New York? What are we talking about? Well, you have Temple Emanuel. Who's rabbi at Temple Emanuel? Rabbi Judah Magnus. Have you heard the name? Anyone at Hebrew U? When's the last time you bought a book published by Hebrew U? We mentioned the Chazon Ish yesterday. A doctorate was done on the Chazon Ish by Binyamin Brown, a brilliant doctorate. Who published it? YU and Magnus Press. Magnus Press, the Hebrew U, is named after Judah Magnus. Judah Magnus was a very interesting individual. Rabbi of Temple Emanuel, who later comes in Aliyah and is a total Shomer Shabbos Jew, 100% davening in a shtibbel in Yerushalayim. All right, his outlook was like Martin Buber. We shouldn't have a Jewish state here. We should have a state for the citizens. We don't have to fight with the Arabs. But there were many good Jews who had the same outlook, the same feeling. Okay, I can tell you people I knew who didn't celebrate Purim, professors at Hebrew U. First day Purim, they stayed in Yerushalayim. Second day, they went to Tel Aviv. How can we celebrate killing the Persians? All right, that they have a problem with it. Let me tell you, after the Hitler period, I have no problem, but let it stand fire. So you have Judah Magnus. You have Mordechai Kaplan. Who is Mordechai Kaplan? The most influential teacher of the period. Head of the teacher seminary at JTS. Mordechai Kaplan, you couldn't talk about Jewish education without talking about Mordechai Kaplan. Then you have the Talmud Torahs. What level? How are you teaching? How is it structured? Where is the curriculum? This is not drip anymore. You can't be satisfied with the cheder. This is the United States. Every last Jewish kid has to go to high school, whether he likes it or not. Right or wrong, you have to be educated. So I think in that time it was till 16. Today I think it's till 17. You have to be educated. Kids want to get ahead. High schools are structured. Kids go on to college. It's a changing world. And you're going to have old-fashioned Talmud Torah, Sechkum Haim, Sechkum Morgan, I'm here today, I'm here tomorrow, I'm studying this, I'm studying that. Organization. All right. There was an individual named Samson Benderly. Make believe you recognize the name so that you can pass for the wise, who did a PhD thesis on Samson Benderly, Nat Winter. Do you remember Nat Winter, Zichrono Levracha? His kid brother is a YU Musmach, David Winter, who lives in Hillcrest, who comes from Hillcrest, who's listening to me from Hillcrest, New York, Queens. Hillcrest! David Winter, my time in yeshiva, he was a drop younger than I am. His older brother, Nat Winter, did a PhD thesis on Samson Benderly. Samson Benderly, these people were not totally frum, but they had traditional feeling. They were Zionists, but they knew how to educate, organize schools, run them properly, have a curriculum, have grades, have exams, pay teachers a decent salary. All right? Then you come back to the problem that shakes us all. Kashrut. What's going on in New York? Are the chickens kosher? Aren't they kosher? And the idea of a kehillah is to bring everyone together and to cooperate. Money, not a problem. Why? Jacob Schiff is throwing all his weight behind the kehillah. This is the same Jacob Schiff who already played a role in the 1890s and the 1900s. This is the Jacob Schiff that they attribute the salvation of Mir Yeshiva to. You know what I'm talking about? This is Jacob Schiff who lent millions of dollars by today's standards index, billions of dollars to the Japanese, the banks he controlled, giving them money to fight Russia and to win the Russo-Japanese War. So this Jacob Schiff, they love the Jews as a result, and not one Jew was ever harmed in Japan or in Shanghai because he was Jewish. And they say it all goes back to Jacob Schiff. Who is Jacob Schiff? Give me 1 second. Who is Jacob Schiff? I've told you more than once, Jacob Schiff was Shatnes, Klayim, a Shor v'chamor yachdav. He grew up on the lap of Rav Simcha Fulhirsch. He grew up in Frankfurt. Came to America. He ultimately becomes the president of Temple Emanuel. They look at Jacob Schiff, Temple Emanuel. The money was there. He was one of the top wealthiest people involved with Rothschild, Warburg. Mentioned the names. He's right at the top of the list. On the other hand, whenever he ate, he put on a yarmulke. He washed, made bracha, benched, kept Shabbos, stayed the night, saw that all his children lit Hanukkah licht. And the classic story is a very true story. I've told it many times, that they came to the Beit Medrash HaGadol on the Lower East Side, and outside the Beit Medrash, there is a beautiful carriage, in today's standards, a Lexus with a chauffeur, and they come into the Beit Medrash, and there's Jacob Schiff in Talis and Tefillin. And they go over to him, Rabbi Yaakov, what's Tutmendal? What are you doing here? You're the president of Temple Emanuel. And he says, I have Yotzai kind for my mutter. I have Yotzai today for my mother. Do you think I can hold her Yotzai in Temple Emanuel? And to quote Jacob Schiff, he said, I quote, to be a good Reformed Jew, you have to have first been raised as an Orthodox Jew. So he was a very interesting individual. Now, all these names I mentioned, and you can throw in Louis Marshall as well, was involved. These are fascinating names. Now the challenge comes out to the Torah world. Do you sit with these people? Can you cooperate with these people? Herbie, let me tell you something. I'm going to spend endless hours on this problem. This is what split the Torah world in America. No, what year? Ellie, what year am I talking about? 1956. What happened in 1956? Ellie, are you familiar with the Silver Era? Do you know who wrote the Silver Era? Do you know how many editions you already have of the Silver Era? Do you know that before the fourth edition, it was selling on eBay for over $1,000? Mint copy, first edition, and you know how much the author gets out of that $1,000? A big zero. Rembrandt died bankrupt, no? Morty, can you afford a Rembrandt today? What are we talking about? Chaim, 1956, your father will tell you. Rabbi Aaron Cutler, the 11 Rosh Yeshiva, the tremendous Issa Chayrim Shamta, we are not allowed to sit with Reform and Conservative. This is a fabulous challenge. How do we relate? Louis Marshall, Jacob Schiff, Mordechai Kaplan, Samson Bendeley. Tremendous question. How do we relate? Charlie will tell you about his background. I'll say one word, Austritt. No? With me, Charlie? Austritt. Out you go. Out the door. Out the door. 1876, Germany. Two types of German Rabbanim. Austritt and Gemeinde, and those who were part of the general community. And this challenges us. This is the big split. Everyone gives me different theories. You have to understand. Let me just go sideways for a minute. Jay, listen to me carefully. Nowadays, we're more highly thought of, a guy like Rakefet from Reitz, than 10, 20 years ago. Could you believe this, Jay? Have you opened up Ripley's, believe it or not, recently? Do you know that Rakefet is in there? Do you know that this past summer, Aaron Rakefet was honored by Lakewood Yeshiva and 6 days later by Chabad? Okay? And these are facts. I have pictures I'm going to give. We have here a man married to a daughter of one of Rabbi Aaron Cutler's pre-World War II Talmidim. So, you got to ask a question. I said something in Lakewood. They loved it when I was speaking and answering all their questions, whatnot. Baruch Hashem. Should have been recorded. It was fascinating. It's a moment that happened there that was a moment in a lifetime. But leave that for another time. But you see, everyone criticizes YU. But today, everyone realizes Reitz has always been from the Rosh Yeshiva Atops, the Lamdanet, the Lamdas, the achievements, the Sfarim, the learning, the Yirat Shemayim. You know how this came about, Chaim? Chovevei Torah. We owe it thanks to Chovevei Torah. Everyone sees, oy vey, and by the way, I not only heard this in Lakewood, I heard this from big shots in Agudat Yisrael who are admirers of mine. I heard it directly. I don't want to mention names, but from the biggest names, they said, no, we never had anything against Yeshivas Reb Chochanon. We see today what Chovevei Torah is capable of saying, capable of doing. Never. Right? They had a criticism of Yeshiva, which is a valid criticism. It opens a whole issue. Do you want a secular university and a yeshiva under one roof? All right, that we can talk about, that we can debate, that's a legitimate question. But the yeshiva per se, and with all the theories, I always feel that 1956 was a critical year of pushing the chasm much wider between the YU world and what we call today the right-wing world in the United States. And there, I don't have to go further, 11 Rosh Yeshiva signed the Cherem, but one Rosh Yeshiva who, to a certain degree, was equal in strength and power and learning and influence to all 11, refused to sign. And that, of course, was Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And this is a very delicate question. Do we join or don't we join? How far can we go in joining? What are our guarantees? What are our limits? Where can we cooperate? Where can't we cooperate? We're Torah Jews. I refuse to use the word Orthodox. It's sinful to use the word Orthodox. There's no such thing as an Orthodox Jew, no such thing as a conservative Jew. We're Jews, and Jews have an obligation, a seven ishma. Some of us take the obligation seriously, some of us don't. But don't call me Orthodox. I am just a simple Torah Jew who lives in accordance with the Vah Hashem Zuhalacha. That's all. And don't think we have choice. I'll talk about this next week. You'll see Rav Asher Weiss on the Sunday class. Don't think, what, do Jews have choice? I could be Orthodox, you can serve, you can... No, you join together with the Meli. You're making a statement. Jews have choice. Give me the magic word that you hear every day in the Jewish agency today. And that's why every time they use that word, another Jew intermarries. The magic word, pluralism. Can you repeat it, please, Ellie? Let me hear it. Pluralism. Got it? All right. Or on the other hand, that which unites us is much more important than that which divides us. Okay, Dov, you have a black and white answer. I don't. My Rebbe didn't. I don't think the 11 Rosh Yeshiva had black and white answers either, but we have to take stands. But that's a very delicate question. And that question comes to the fore not 90%, but 100% with the whole beautiful idea, we're going to have a tequilah in New York. Yes, Jay?
I'm looking here at a press release from the JTA dated March 8, 1956.
Okay.
Rabbinic Alliance of America.
Right.
Today bans participation by Orthodox rabbis and organizations from participating in the synagogue council.
Right.
My question is, what is the Rabbinic Alliance of America?
That's Torah V'das. The Rabbinic Alliance today is very big. It's, I think, over 1,000 members. But that was, we'll come to that.
Where does it sit in relation to RCA?
It's to the right of RCA. It was organized to be to the right of RCA, organized to be American-trained rabbis who will have nothing to do with Reform and Conservative. Exactly right. That's
Rabbinic Alliance. Did not endorse this?
Listen, I got to make a living. You know how many lectures I've given? Are you familiar with the two volumes called The Rav, The World? Who wrote it?
No? I didn't hear what you said. Did he endorse it or he was opposed?
No, he was opposed. He refused to sign. And that which unites us, not that which divides us. Dimitri, I want to make a class list. Write your name clearly with your email or your contact number. Because at my age, I need Modela Kaddish Baruch Hu. Last year, I didn't have to call off any class due to ill health. But when Minvet Delta ain't something al hanes. So I hope, Yisrat Hashem, I should not have to call off any class. I should have to call off a class if I'm traveling. The simachet ishto, v'dayla chakima b'remisa. But Yisrat Hashem. Okay, back here. What am I leading up to? Ramaz was the leading Orthodox rabbi to go ahead with the Tehillah idea. He and one other very well-known rabbi, Rabbi Dr. Hillel Klein. Hillel Klein, rabbi of what ultimately becomes Ohed Tzedek in the Upper West Side. Hungarians with an overtone of Yekis, German Orthodoxy, because that area of Hungary next to Germany, it's very hard to differentiate between Germany and Hungary. You had both of them together. And he, Rabbi Hillel Klein, who was a big Talmud Chacham and a Yerusha Mayim and has endless descendants, Shomrei Torah, Mitzvot, many living in Israel today, he and Ramaz took a more liberal attitude, try to work out a decent, I would use the word decent, flexible, but yet a halachic relationship with the general community. Now, a world has been written on this, and I don't want to go into any more details, but just give you an idea. Two tremendous issues come up. One, the Talmud Torah, and to the Kashrut. You talk about Talmud Torah, fine. Samson Benderly will organize. Mordechai Kaplan will help with curriculum. But the rabbis must have veto power that what's taught is acceptable to the Orthodox rabbinate. And they tried desperately to work this out. An even more difficult question was Kashrut. And here they came up with the idea that they would organize a New York Board of Rabbis. And all the Orthodox rabbis in New York would be part of this Board of Rabbis, and they would oversee the Kashrut. Now, I need not tell you, here too, you step into a minefield. If we can go back to 1910 and you're organizing a New York Board of Rabbis, let's look at the personalities. Here you have the old-time Rabbanim from Europe, and you already have a sprinkling of American-trained rabbis, American even, some maybe not yet born in America, but you're right on the way than having a slew of American-born rabbis. And these rabbis have influence, not just the old-timers, the new rabbis. Some of them later become part of the conservative movement, but at this time, there are no clearly defined lines yet. No, you take an Elder Rav, and he looks at an American-trained rabbi, and he says, what, I'm going to sit with this shit yingel? What can I learn, and what does he know how to learn? What's he boasting? He made a seam in Masechet Megillah? When I was a kid of 12, we learned Masechet Megillah in a month's time or a week's time. You understand that you have no idea you're dealing here. You're dealing here with egos. Most human beings have egos. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that I was beaten to a pulp at the age of 23 in my first shtela, and I totally, almost totally lost my ego there. When I speak in Beit Shemesh, we're going to launch the new book in Beit Shemesh. We have a date already. I'll explain a little bit of the ego left in me, and I'll tell you a story about the Rav. Mark, that story goes for 36,000 to the IOU list. We find a shalom, you don't throw a story like that out. Chinam ein kesef. But you're dealing here with egos. You're dealing more than egos. You're dealing with money. Oh boy. Kashrut. Who's going to get the money? Who's going to make the money? Who's going to make the decisions? These yinglach are going to get, I think Yomo, did you sign in? He doesn't want to say them. Pass it back. Yomo is in the world of Yomo. Yomo, you're dealing with egos, you're dealing with money, you're dealing with titles, you're dealing with prestige, you're dealing with kavod. The kashrut, the rabbis, the machloket, the inner struggle, the agudas harabbanim. What, we're going to take shikingles who are trained in JTS? These are rabbis? They're going to be equals with us? We're going to take Shik Yingles who studied uptown, wait, it's not uptown yet, who studied downtown on East Broadway in Yeshivas Rizkalchanan, these, the Yinglach. My dear students, the machloket was endless. It went on years, compromise. Ultimately, it did not succeed. And about all that came out of it on a positive level was, yes, there was an understanding we need unity. Ultimately, the attempt to organize the rabbis gave birth to two local organizations, one that still exists until today, and one that went out of business long ago. What am I referring to? It gave birth to the Vad HaRabbanim of New York. The Vad HaRabbanim of New York was like a local organization of the Agudas HaRabbanim, but it was more inclusive. It did include Rabbanim who were not necessarily in the Agudas HaRabbanim. And it gave birth to the New York Board of Rabbis. New York Board of Rabbis already, which was a direct development from this board of rabbis that they were talking about alongside the Bureau of Education and all under the Kehillah. The New York Board of Rabbis became the red letter, the herring, reform, conservative, orthodox. Rabbi Aaron Cutler with 10 other great Rosh Yeshiva, including members of the Yeshiva University faculty of David Lipschitz. Rav Mendel Zaks came out 100% Orthodox synagogue, cannot sit with conservative reform in synagogue council, and an Orthodox rabbi cannot sit with conservative reform in mixed board of rabbis. But what is amazing, Herbie? Ramaz was one of the few, and certainly the most famous, the most prestigious, of all the Rabbanim who agreed to go along. He was willing. Look at the picture of Ramaz. What would you call him? Old-fashioned, old-modish, outlandish, Haredi, East European. But the breitkeit, the breadth of vision was there. He knew that this is America. It's not Eastern Europe anymore. Morty, do you understand, the influence on Joe Lichtenstein? This was his role model. This was his grandfather-in-law. This was the rub of the Kehila. If he was broad, then you can imagine the influence on an American trained, an American product on Joe Lichtenstein. And now I'll explain something to you. With this background, you have tremendous insight. Watch. You have tremendous insight. Notice, we study the history of Torah in America. These lectures are being listened to by thousands of people, without exaggeration. So many, their eyes pop. Herbert Goldstein was president of synagogue council. Leo Young, active in synagogue council. These men were strictly Orthodox, so they'll ask Rakefet, how can it be? So Rakefet has to explain it was a different era. No one raised that issue. We're all Jews. At that time, Torah, Judaism in America was too weak to raise the issue. What do we have to do with these apikorsim? With these tunyet tinokot shenishpu? Let me talk like a Chabadnik, not like a Litvak. Tinokot shenishpu? When you mention Joe Lichtenstein Synagogue Council, no one in the world will raise that issue. You understand what I'm saying? He already was part and parcel of the general overtone of Jewish existence. Question doesn't get off the floor with him. And I can still remember when the 11 Rosh Yeshiva gave their decision, and we in the yeshiva all knew that the Rav refused to sign on. And you should know there was one other great gadol who refused to sign. He was the only non-Rosh Yeshiva asked to sign. He was probably the greatest lamdan in America as far as knowledge was, and activism was Reb Lezer Silva. And Reb Lezer Silva refused to sign. He said the whole purpose of the Sisa is to give an ashtach to Yeshiva Reb Chochanan. And how would you say that in English? To prod with a stick, give a kick to Yeshiva University. He refused to sign, but the Rav refused to sign. So within YU was always multilithic. What was going on in the Beis Medrash? The machloikis, the students fighting. You understand, students are young. Everyone thinks they have absolute truth. We live with that today. The left wing, the right wing, the fighting, and a big sign went up in the basement. I remember it like yesterday. And the right wingers are putting up the sign. They're quoting Rabbi Joe Lichtenstein. Rabbi Lichtenstein, who by then was the most famous rabbi in the United States of America and all of the Western Hemisphere, Kilat Yeshur and KJ. And they're quoting Rabbi Lichtenstein. Let those who ask the question of the Rosh Yeshiva abide by their decision. But we didn't ask the question, and we have our own rabbis, and we know whom to follow. and they put up this sign as if to say the chutzpah of this Rabbi Luchstein to say words like that, considering that Rabbi Aaron Cutler signed, the Rabbi Moshe Feinstein signed, and the Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner signed, the Rabbi Avraham Yaffin signed, and you go on and on with the list of the 11 Rashi Yeshiva, what the chutzpah. But that was Joe Luchstein. He was part and parcel. If Ramaz could attempt to go with the Kehila, and it didn't work out. I'll quote to you next week from the doctorate on the Kehila, just to give you a little taste of what the Machloket became and how Ribbono Shel Olam stories could surface, but no one would ever question Joe Luchstein. He had this background. Rabbis Young and Goldstein, whenever you mention, they were presidents of synagogue council, they were active. Oh boy, wow, but they were so frum, how could it be? It's explained, a different era, a different way of thinking, different challenges, a different reality. It's not that we're talking din d'oraita or din d'rabbanan here, we're talking about a social, economic, psychological reality. But Rabbi Luchstein, no one in the world will ask that question. Okay. It's an interesting issue. Ellie, I can tell you I was on the 11 Rosh Yeshiva side at that time. You follow? I was not yet a Talmud of the Rav, and I was not yet, I was a kid. I can still remember my anger looking at I can just see on the bulletin board and seeing the quote from Rabbi Luchstein, and I can still remember my anger. Chutzpah, who is he? Oh no, it's Rabbi Luchstein. All right, Dukram will get there. Dukram has now. Okay. Now,
what would the
Rav's father? Rav Moshe was out of it. He's not alive.
I said, what would
he have? That's like asking if my grandmother had roller skates, she would have been a dervish. You know, you can't. Rav Moshe, I have a big Yetzer Hara Jay. My new book just came out, and unfortunately, this book has made me very. They're going to remember me for one thing in this book, the picture. You come a few times, I'll give you a gift, the book. I have to see you're a regular student again, you get a gift. But you'll see the picture. Tova Lichtenstein can't believe what Chaim can't believe it, even though it, and in Minas Shemaim, it's a whole lecture, maybe in Beit Shemesh I'll reveal some of the inner workings, how I got there. It took 5 years. But the next book, they're working in America on my shirim on civil marriage. So I think I'm going to rework the two series of shirim I gave that everyone bothers me to have more details. I think I'm going to rework my shirim on Das Teira. And then I want to rework my shayurim on how the Rav left Aguda and became a Mizrahi. You understand? To tell your story is very simple. I understand. Chaim, that's a different story with the Sfadim and the Balei Tshuva and a little bit open-mindedness. But the Rav, you're talking about, what would Rav Moshe say? Rav Chaim called the whole Zionist movement atheism. And look who his grandson, who was a gonadir. You understand the debate, the Vavraham said about the Rav, the spirit of his grandfather rests upon him. Are you aware of that? That's who the Rav got smicha from, Rav Dovek Ana Shapiro, the Vavraham. And take a look where the Rav, take a look at the Rav's grandson, Rosh Yeshiva of Teira Vadas today. One grandson, Rosh Yeshiva of Har Etzion, and one Rosh Yeshiva, and one granddaughter of the Rav, a Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva for Women that she heads up. We'll talk about it later. Okay, let me come back here. So that question, let it hang fire. Rav Moshe began life, believe me, not as a Zionist. But ultimately, the experience of the Jews had an impact on him. He taught in Tachkamoni. So what would he say? I don't know. But I know what the Rav said. Now let me entertain you. There's something amazing here. who was the biggest opponent to Ramaz on the attitude towards the Kehillah? No, help me out. Rabbi Margolis versus Rabbi Margolis. Except the first name was different. Rav Gavriel Zev Margolis. Once again, a name that I grew up with, we all knew about him. Today it's gone and forgotten. Gavriel Zev, not Ramaz, but Gavriel Zev Margolis, not Moshe Zvolin. Again, I can quote to you from Gurak's work, but no need to go into all the quotes. Let me give you his years. He basically parallels the life of Ramaz. 1848-1935. He arrived in Boston, brought over, after Ramaz went to New York, they brought him from Europe to Boston, 1908. He was 60 years old already. From Boston, 1912, just like Ramaz, the same story. 5-6 years later, he's in New York. And in New York, totally opposed to the Kehillah. Totally opposed to Agudat HaRabbanim. Not only that, Eli, he organizes his own rabbinical organization, Knesset HaRabbanim HaOrthodoxim. Knesset HaRabbanim, that's what it was known by. 135 members. Why all this opposition? All right, this is a very basic issue. You're going to allow your Talmud Torahs to be under the scrutiny of Mordechai Kaplan, of Samson Benderly, even if you have some control and some veto power. Elu Elohecha Yisrael, Kashrut. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry, Emma, Maritz, every boor, everyone who learned to Daf Gemara, suddenly he's a rabbi and he's involved in supervision? All right. But there was something much bigger, much greater. And I just alluded to it. World War I, everyone became a Zionist. Before World War I, the Zionist movement was as popular as a movement to beat the heck out of children. Ooh, crazy Zionism. You know all the stories and all the jokes and this week, last week, Sedra. Mi ayish hayarei v'racha levav, the famous drasha I spoke about. World War I woke the Jews up. We must have a Jewish state. We must have a place of refuge. We must get the Jews out of Europe. Zionism went on the map. You talk about the Kehillah, every last activist was a Zionist. Ramaz, Mizrahi, every last one. Secular Zionist, Poel Tzion, the forerunner to Mapai, social Zionists, every last person, Louis Marshall. This was very hard. These were German Jews who were assimilated. Zionists. Gavriel Zev Margolis, how can you be a Zionist? To be a Zionist, you believe in bringing Jewish sovereignty before the advent of Mashiach Tzidkenu? Impossible. The three oaths, the Gemara at the end of Ketuvot. How can you establish a Jewish state? How can you rebel against the nations in the world? How can you climb up Shayalo Lubachoma? How can you have these visions, these dreams? You're an Apikiris Gomor. You don't believe in God. You don't believe in Mashiach. You're throwing everything away. This Margolis was a forerunner to the Sakhma Rav. And you had 135 Rabbanim who agreed with him. 135. He's popularly called Rav Velvula, very charismatic, tremendous Talmud Chacham, author of Svarim. He fought the Kehila bitterly. He fought Ramaz bitterly. He had influence. He had power. He was brought to New York not just by a shul. He was brought to New York by an organization called Adapt Israel. A-D-A-T-H. Israel, spelt as Israel. Anyone recognize what that was? It's still in existence. They were more than a shul. They were involved in kashrut. More than that, they owned more burial land than any other organization in the greater New York area. Until then, shuls had chevra kaddishes, and shuls bought burial land. Whenever you go, if you go to Mount Hebron, for instance, in Queens, all my Malka and myself, all our grandparents are buried in Mount Hebron, buried on Main Street in Queens. Malka not only has grandparents, she has great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents buried in Queens. You walk up and down, you'll notice this plot of land was bought by this shul. This plot of land was subdivided and bought by a lodge, all the Jews who came from this plot of Lamsha. This plot of land was bought by another shul. Adat Israel was like a general organization that bought land in every cemetery. So you didn't have to be specifically a member of a lodge, a member of a Chevreshaft, a Landsmannschaft, or a member of a particular shul. And they had power. They, at one time, Adat Israel, when I was growing up, everyone knew of them. And they're the ones who brought the second Rabbi Margolis to New York. And he fought bitterly. Ultimately, he won out when it came to the Kehillah. There was so much strife and tension and criticism that they couldn't get it off the floor. He won out. The reality was such that you can't have a Talmud Torah system where ultimately Mordechai Kaplan has the final say in curriculum. You'll see, there were problems. You read the doctorate, even the salaries. What shul can afford to pay a proper salary to a Talmud Torah teacher? There was one shul called the Talmud Torah, the Uptown Talmud Torah, that ran on a high level. But most Talmud Torahs, what are they telling us? Who's going to raise the money? Where are we going to get this money? The kashrut, once again, till you have the OU, any great Talmud Chacham, in order to make a living, has to get involved in kashrut. Who's going to tell me not to be involved? If ich kann besser lernen, I can learn better than those 20 people they want to send. And finally, let me quote and let me recall a memory. Life at times is wonderful and life at times is sad. There was a fellow in yeshiva, it's after my time, but whenever I spoke in America, he would come to hear me. And maybe you recognize the name, Rabbi Joshua Hoffman. Anyone recognize, remember the name? He was crippled at the end and never married, no children, he's not alive. I recall his memory fondly. He was a Talmud Chacham and a Yerei Shemayim. So he evidently wrote a master's thesis for Bernard Revel, where he dealt with Rav Velbeler as well, with the second Rabbi Gabriel Zev Margolis as well. And he tells the whole story of Rabbi Margolis, and he's furious at Dr. Judah Magnus, who later becomes the first president of the Hebrew University. Can you cooperate with a man who is a Reformed rabbi and is involved in Chochmat Yisrael? How can you cooperate with such an individual? And then he became hysterical with Yeshiva University, with Dreetz. Why? And here there's an interesting story. All of you know that the Travis family, Rabbi Revel made a shidduch, Rabbi Moshe Bick, if I can recall his name. So Rabbi Moshe Bick said to me, with these ears I heard Rabbi Moshe say to me, the first shidduch ever made in America was Rabbi Revel. They made a shidduch, Rabbi Zivitz of Pittsburgh met Rabbi Revel, who was staying in Philadelphia, helping Rabbi Leventhal. He had just arrived, 1906. And he sees such a Talmud Chacham, as a Shenim Talmud Chacham, and there's this girl growing up in Marietta, Ohio, Travis family's Hayasara Travis, and she needs a shidduch. She's 18, 19, and they meet on 1908 Thanksgiving Day, and they get married June of 1909. So now you have a great Talmud Chacham getting a PhD. He's the first PhD from Dropsy, which today is part of UFP, and you have at that time a very well-to-do family. So it seems that Rabbi Revel's father-in-law, and could be the brother-in-law, because the whole family was involved. So this Rabbi Velvela Margolis met with the Travis family. And Mr. Travis was telling him the father-in-law, it's Isaac Travis, Yitzchak, the father-in-law, and it's the father of Solomon Travis, who I knew personally. And the father-in-law of Rabbi Revel tells him that the yeshiva is going to organize a division that will be involved with Haskalah and Matan Hebrew, which, you know, we're talking the realm, the fruits of Zionism. And Rabbi Margolis Velvel got hysterical, and he put the yeshiva in Chayrim, and he wrote letters, and he maledicted. No, what was Travis talking about? So people often wonder. Josh Kaufman raises the issue. If you go to the book Revel, and you'll notice exactly at this time, the Mizrahi in 1917 organized in America a teachers' institute to prepare teachers. People should know how to teach and to know what to teach and how to be an educator. Don't you take courses today? They drive you crazy till you become a rabbi. You have to have a course in this and a course in that and psychology and teaching and education. And, well, Ribbono Shel Olam, all right. Could be the courses are needed. I'm thankful in my days we didn't have those courses. You learned how to teach by watching a master teacher. And you had to have a heart. If you don't have a heart, all the courses in the world are not going to help. You have to love every student, whether he's a tzaddik or a rasha, but he's a human being, and you have to love and inspire. So they organized the Mizrahi. This is Meir Berlin, 1917. Mayor Berlin was the son of the Netziv. He was a world-class leader, but he was not an educator. He was involved in politics, Mizrahi, putting it on the map, and the Teachers Institute was floundering. In 1922, what later becomes Yeshiva University took the Teachers Institute under its wings, and it became a division of the yeshiva. So this has to be what Mr. Travis is talking about. But from the Velvel, Margolis heard this, a yeshiva taking under its wings a school, Shemedabrim Sham Biyavrit, Malamdim Biyavrit, and they have Haskalah literature. Oh boy. So he not only could oppose Ramaz and Lukstein and all that was happening, Kehillah and Kashrut and rabbis and reform and conservative, but here you have a yeshiva that is introducing apikursis. And fascinating, fascinating topic. And here we come to the apex. And again, to recall these names, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, he's quoting his rabbi. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik was hard to describe. What a wonderful individual, what a lamdan, what a Talmud Chacham, but what a humble, down-to-earth, approachable person. The Rav, when Jay Solomon saw the Rav, he shook a little. Right or wrong, Jay? Right. There was a certain aura about him. But Rav Aaron, you could approach. He was very, very different. Very different. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik once remarked, he's now quoting Rav Aaron, although today there are many Kanoim or Zealots on the American Jewish scene, in those days, Rav Velvel was the Kanoi par excellence. Okay? And this is the comment of Rav Lezer Silva that a dummy named Rakefet quotes in the Silva era. When Rav Lezer celebrated his 75th birthday, he already was persona grata in Hakadosh Yisrael, you know, a little bit. He was too broad-minded for them. Even already in their Gudas HaRabbanim, although they could never, they always had a being, they always knew he was the man who did it all. So Rav Lezer Silva gets up at the RCA. It's now his 75th birthday. There's a picture in my book of all the Gedolim of RCA, his son and Rabbi Rachman and all the others honoring him. And Rav Lezer gets up and says, as only he could, Ich de ken de Gemara red from Ashtot, Anir Shakula Kahanim. I know the Gemara, where the Gemara raises the issue. It's a Yishami Gittin, a city that is entirely Kohanim. How do you divide up the Aliyahs? But he said, but Hein tov mi an andere problema. Today we have a different problem. Ir Shakulo Kanoim. It's a city, everyone today is a Kanoi. So this is Rav Velvel. He was the Kanoi par excellence. And then Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Josh Hoffman ties it together. The Gemara says that there's never a moment when there's not a great leader in Israel. When the sun goes down on one great Talmud Chacham, another great Talmud Chacham is born. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said, when did Rav Velvel die? September 8th, 1935. That's exactly who arrived in America then. Rav Aaron Cutler, raising funds for Kletzk. It was his first visit to America. And Rav Aaron afterwards would never come back to Yeshiva University to give a shir, a guest lecture. All the Gedolim who visited America, everyone gave a guest lecture in yeshivas, Rav Yitzchak Kochanan. But Rav Aaron, by 35, he did give a shir. He was forced into it. I write about it in Revel. I know what happened. I interviewed the people. He was in doubt whether to give a shir. He had heard this about the yeshiva, that about the yeshiva. Talking 1935. So the Alta Kletzka, the Alta Slutska, Kletz began in Slutz. So Rabbi Rav Palev and Rav Henkin, Rav Aaron had tremendous derech eretz for, obviously, and Rav Henkin said, Vasi, das ist nicht anders from an under the yeshiva, so hat der college, das ist alts. Oh, but the yeshiva say yeshiva, why are you hesitant? It's a regular yeshiva, it's no different than any other yeshiva. Alright, it has a college, but that's America. But the yeshiva is a yeshiva. So Rav Aaron gave the shir. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik describes that at the shir, Rav Chaim Zimmerman, who had just arrived from Europe, interrupted the shir time and again. taking issues, throwing questions at Reb Aaron's presentation. All right, that captures, you've heard the name of Chaim Zimmerman, Reb Baruch Belebe, which is nephew Reb Chaim Zimmerman. How could you have not heard of the name, the Agam Sacha? And Reb Chaim, Chicago, afterwards Brooklyn, Chicago, Brooklyn, Yerushalayim, Reb Chaim Zimmerman, Google him, go to Arafa, go and Google and see who this Gon was. We all knew Reb Chaim Zimmerman. But Reb Chaim Zimmerman, Reb Baruch Be'et, threw him out, saved his life, kicked him out, get the heck out of Europe, you'll ruin all the yeshiva. What do you mean by that? Reb Chaim Zimmerman knew Kala Torah Kula, and he was autodidactic. He knew every language, he knew every science, every mathematics. He wrote science for the Jewish press afterwards, his Sfarim, science, Torah, Kiddush HaKadosh, and he kicked them out to America. And here comes Reb Aaron Cutler, and he's giving his shiur, and here is Reb Chaim Zimmerman, who in his youth, with all his onus and ability and pushiness, he's cutting Reb Aaron down right in the middle of the shiur. And he ends off this article I'm quoting to you from the commentator, and he ends off that Reb Aaron Soloveitchik said, see, there always had to be a Kanoi in America. So Reb Velvel passed away, and that's when Reb Aaron arrived the first time, and a few years later, he comes back, and all of American Torah changes, including the fact that we're sitting here is only due to Reb Aaron Cutler. You understand, Herbie? You understand what I just said? Who ever heard of a Kollel? Why, you had Kollel? I was 23 years old. They kicked me out. They said, if you don't know how to learn by now, you'll be in a Maritz all your life. And they were right. We knew how to learn by 23. The basis was there, all right? I admit, I know 100,000 times more than what I knew at 23. But the basis of how to learn, of how to get knowledge, it was there. All right, I went out certain areas on my own. It's true, I can paskin and ashal, I know. That's something that yeshiva never taught me. But it's something you've developed. You have to shas paskin, shima, shelet, and shivet, etc., etc. But what a fascinating comment, that the light of Torah, of Kanot, there is Reb Velvel, there is Reb Aaron, and there's the side story, Reb Chaim Zimmerman. And you know my connection to Reb Chaim, my cousin, those of you who knows Josh Daniel, you know the Josh Daniel. No, ask Josh who his father's Rebbe was. His father studied with Reb Chaim Zimmerman for decades in Borough Park, in Rabbi Wahlberg Shul, Sharei Amuna. Dr. Joe Kamenetsky, another time Reb Chaim Zimmerman. But who was Reb Chaim Zimmerman's chavruta when he came to America? Yeshivas Chol Chanan, Rabbi Dov Sherman. He, for many years, taught in RJJ. Did anyone here go to RJJ? You would know the name Rabbi Sherman, Rabbi Dov Sherman. He was a London. He was a poet. He was a master of Hebrew. His daughter is married to my kid brother. So we have a direct connection to Reb Chaim Zimmerman many, many ways over. Wait, he still comes to Yeshiva where? In the original Kamenet. All right, that's a tour, but there's nothing. Who wear cufflings? Which Reb Chaim are you talking about? Reb Chaim Zimmerman. What's pshat that he wore cufflings? What are you trying to say? Covered Shabbos, you're saying? Habantot, you're saying maybe a shayla and carry? There was no Erev yet in Borough Park, so he wore cufflings, Baruch Hashem. His son-in-law is my student, Jacob Henry Blinder, is my student. All right, to reiterate, first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming, and we'll finish out the Kehillah next week, and then I come back to Joe Lookstein, and you'll see, I have what to show you, life before your eyes, the difference between him and Haki. We'll have a good laugh, and then we have to come into how these rabbis forced the conservative movement to identify itself. They could no longer fake out the world, and you'll see it's very, very fascinating when I'm going to show you the depositions, etc. So what did we do today? We dealt with Rabbi Joseph Lichtenstein, we dealt with the influence, we dealt with Ramaz, we dealt with the Kehillah. I have one more source on the Kehillah. I just want to show you a little bit of the strife of the Lashon Hara, how deep it can go. Be'ezrat Hashem, next Sunday, Monday, we pick up exactly where we left off. Now, I want to mention, my dear student, Rabbi Unger, feeds me books to read. This book is a translation of the, in English, I understand, was published originally by Oxford. This is the translation. It's a fabulous volume. Rav Gustman was one of a kind. And I just want to make two corrections in the book. Again, it's slightly Haredi, and it's not right what they do. They write about the Rabbanan in Vilna, and they call him Rubinstein. The Rav of Vilna is Rav Yitzchak Rubinstein. A guy named Rakefet did postdoctoral research. It's published even Volume 1 or Volume 2 of Rakefet Aaron. It made a bit of a splash when it came out. There was a tremendous machloket. I can't go into details now. It'll take too long, but I just want to tell you, officially, Rav Chaim Moshe could not be the Rav of Vilna because he didn't have a high school education, he didn't know Russian. In order to be a Rav in post-World War I Poland, you had to have a high school equivalency, you had to have an education, certain basic knowledge. So they elected Rav Yitzchak Rubinstein, who was a Slabodka graduate, who was a Talmud Chacham, who was a Mizrachiite. But the right-wing world never forgave him because he carried the title chief rabbi. But it's not right, because he was very deferential to Rav Chaim Moshe, very respectful. He was not an Amoritz. And can anyone tell me when he was saved from Hitler? Where did he spend his last few years? Chaim, you've heard of Yeshiva University? He was a Magid Shia, and Yeshiva was Ochanan. His picture might even be in my new book, with the 1944 faculty. I believe his picture is there. That's one correction. A second correction is, again, they talk about the Var HaTzala. They attribute the founding of the Var HaTzala to Rav Aaron Cutler. That's criminal, mamish criminal. The founding of the Var HaTzala is Rav Lazer Silva. If not for Rav Lazer Silva, there'd be no Var HaTzala, and so many less Jews would have been saved. Yes, Rakefet said in class, when Rav Aaron arrived in America and threw himself into Var HaTzala, he became a very key personality, if not the key personality. But the founding was Rav Lazer. The greatest story about Rav Gustman, who I knew personally, and I knew him through his Talmidim, the greatest story in here is a story I've heard many, many times, where when he first opened up the yeshiva, he needed food to feed the students. And it was difficult. Ellie, you don't mind staying a little longer? Because now I'm commenting on general. I have what to say to let off steam. This is my salary. I pay myself. I can talk to intelligent people and blow my lid. So he had the food from a little hotel of senior citizens up the block. So some Kanaim said to him, you don't know what's going on in Israel. How dare you use their heksha? It's not good enough. And if you don't switch to our Eidah Haredit Heksha, we're going to put up signs that you're an apikoris and maledict you. And if you switch, we're going to put up signs that welcome to the Gaon Rav Gustman. And Rav Gustman, who was very strong and powerful, looked them right in the eye and he said to them, let me tell you something. You talk about giving me kavod? You don't even know what kavod is. I walked in at the age of 22. I was a member of the Beis Din in Vilna, and I was a little late to a meeting of all the great Rabbanim of the era, and I walked in and Rav Chaim Moshe stood up for me, and every Rav there stood up. You're going to give me kavod? What are you talking about? You're going to give me bushat? What are you, crazy? My little son, Merrick, had one son, Meir. My son was beaten by the Nazis before my eyes till they killed him. I held him in my hands. I buried him. I took his shoes and I sold the shoes in order to buy food. You're gonna be mashpilote? Get the heck out of here. and he remained with the Hechsher, and boy, they couldn't do a thing. That's Rav Gusman. The other story that's equally famous is he and his wife, you know, that beginning with the 69, began the march to the Kotel of the children with the flags, the youth. So he would go with his wife to see it. He used to go down. I remember I used to go down from Heichal Shlomo. So today they go, men and women separate. They have different areas. Even B'nai Akiva became top from. So some Kanoi says, Rebbe, what are you wasting your time watching this Zionistim dancing? He said, for someone who saw Jewish children killed before his eyes, have no greater joy than watching this. This is Rav Gusman, Zeichel Tzaddik Livracha, and this Thursday is the yahrzeit of a Talmud of his, Dr. David Applebaum, he and an Abba Hashem Yikom Damam. I'll be at the cemetery, Be'ezrat Hashem. That's what I told him. I couldn't come Tuesday, Thursday night to Beit Shemesh. I have to go to the yahrzeit. This is one of the weekly freebies. This is given out by the Nativ, I think, once a month. So they have important people. Anima minbe amuna shleima. How can we translate belief? And here is beautiful. This is Esti Lichtenstein Rosenberg, the head of the yeshiva. Where is it? The Migdalos in the kibbutz. It's beautiful. You got to hear her speak. She is fabulous. I want to say a few words about YU that eats my heart out. It seems the Jerusalem Post is out to destroy YU. I couldn't believe the article on Friday. Everyone was talking about it, so they gave me a copy. So I have to tell you, all right, these things went on. I don't know what's true, what's not true. You have to have a court of law decide, but let's assume it is true. All right, we had tragedies. But that's ancient history. We're talking the 70s into the 80s. That's, if my calculations are correct, we're dealing with at least 30 years ago. 30, 40 years ago. With one of them, it's even more than that. They say 1955. I don't know. They threw in a third name here. I don't even know who that is. But all right, I haven't lived in America more than 50 years. But have Rachmanis, the yeshivas, we're correcting ourselves. If we're going to go after institutions because of scandals, we won't be left with a Torah institution, unfortunately. Rakefet always asked a simple question. You have to have 10 commandments. Jews saw Maimon HaSinai, Jews saw Kriyat Yamsuf. And 2 minutes later, you need 10 commandments, Lo Tignov, Lo Tirzach, Lo Tinov. But Jews are Jews, people are people, humans are humans. It's very, very sad. But please, let yeshiva breathe. Very, very frightening to me. It's like they have an axe to grind. Now, meyinim l'inyan b'yoto inyan, this issue, here are the two leaders of so-called Orthodox homos and Orthodox lesbians. Rakefet has the distinct privilege of being a Rebbe to both these individuals. As a matter of fact, the head of the homos is the only student of mine who ever took out my eldest daughter. So I don't know how that fits in with the homoism, but okay. Let me tell you something. Steve Greenberg, could be, he has that tendency. The Gemara speaks of punctum and andragonus. So I'm not that stupid. I know that there is a certain percentage. If you do the research, you'll find it's less than 2% of the animal kingdom and of the human beings. Let me tell you the story of this lady, who's a lovely, lovely lady. I know her as Lori, but today she goes with the name Miriam, and she's a Shomeret Shabbat 100%. She married a woman, God have mercy, married. It was the worst shaila I've ever got in my life from her parents. Aaron, should we go to the wedding? God have mercy. So let me tell you the story. This lady is as much a lesbian as I'm a homo, okay? Here's the story, and this is, by the way, in 80% of these issues, 90%. There's one of the biggest menuvalama alive lives in America. His name is Mordechai Gafni, or Mark Winnias, whatever name you know him by. this man, this was all in the New York Times, that originally the research was done, and it's 20 years ago in Yediot, but no names were mentioned. Later, they went public with names, the women involved. I, unfortunately, suffered from day one because this Cabot Cow family where this girl was born became my closest friends. Today, Seal is gone, Zichrono Levracha, and Bernie, one of the most famous doctors in New York, is in his mid-90s, and he's here part of the time. He has children living here. But obviously, he doesn't function the way he did years ago. So when they became totally frum and took their kids and switched them, I believe it was to Ramaz, if I'm not mistaken, and they needed some extra help to catch up, they switched them to a yeshiva from a public school. So Bernie, Dr. Kavakow, asked Steve Riskin, send me a student. I'll pay him, you know, to help my daughter bridge the gap. So he sent this Winnie Oz, brilliant kid, but an illness, a sexual illness, whatever it is. And her sister, her younger sister, Sarah, who went public in the New York Times, was all of 13, 14, and statutory rape, I don't have to spell it out, time after time after time. Sarah confided in her sister Lori, who was 2 years older, and the result, Sarah later leaves religion, which you can't blame her. But she's married once, married twice, but married to a normal man. Lori is who she is today. Do you think that was inborn, or it's the result of life experience? I challenge you to do your research. So they came out Orthodox day schools, open letter, principles. Here you have a whole article on Yeshiva University. They want to march. The gays, right now this is going on, right now. A yeshiva, could you imagine they want to march on campus, but it's a university, they take money. What should our attitude be? And I tell you, and I heard the Rebbe get hysterical on this topic, it's recorded, it's just frightening where we're at. But look, no one here, again, when Smotrich said we should be a halachic state, he did a terrible service to Torah, because all he had to say is we should be a Jewish state. Jewish state means public thoroughfare, Shabbat, Kashrut, etc. When you say halachic state, someone showed me an article in the German press. I couldn't believe my eyes. Germany, anti-Semites. Have a grandson who's going there today, actually, on business, and his firm uses him because the kid knows English against his will. All the years he told his parents, why do you have to speak English? I'm born here, I grew up here. I said to this kid the other day, we put the mezuzah up in his new home in the Shomron. I said, you tell the stones in Berlin that you took revenge upon Hitler, a new Dalai Amot in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem. So, you know what the article in German said? That you're going to have a Medinat Halacha, we're going to execute Shabbos desecrators. And it quoted the Pesukim, Mot Yamut, and it's going to execute the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're going to execute people. There's not a Torah Shebachtav and a Torah Shebalpeh, and you haven't heard 1,001 Shurim on the difference between Midat HaChetet, Midat HaDin, and Midat HaRachamim. We don't execute anybody. So our attitude has to be, we cannot justify a homosexual existence. It is not normative. It's not what the Torah wants. If people are born with certain tendencies, I had 5 cases in my years of teaching. 4.5 out of 5 were helped by psychologists who specialized in this. You can be helped. If not, you have to overcome. You have to live with the reality. Some of us are born with tempers. You have no idea what I saw in my life with tempers. Now I challenge you to tell me when was the last time Raketa got angry. Ellie, I will tell you the last time. 1972, in a class in Michlala, I got angry because the girls were maledicting Rav Gorin with the Heta for the Langer brother and sister. Follow me? It's the last time I got angry, 1972. Ribbono Shel Olam, but poor YU, it's terrible. They're marching. As Morty said to me, and I had the same feeling, what are you going to have, a parade of Mechallelei Shabbos? A parade of Ochlei Nevelet and Trefot? Ribbono Shel Olam. And our Supreme Court here, pardon me, they're idiots at times. There shouldn't be allowed a parade like this in Jerusalem. It offends 90% of the population. When I was brought up in democracy, I was taught democracy, you can do whatever you want, except you can't throw stones in someone's window. When you have a parade like this in Jerusalem, you're throwing stones in 90% of the population. And I can see, well, they'll say, if we can do it in Jerusalem, why can't we do it in Washington Heights? Anyway, let me let off steam. I hope someone is listening. I hope we'll have some impact. My dear students, who do we see in this picture? We know that guy, and the other person is Aaron Cutler, the CEO of Lakewood. And here we are in his home, a little bit different than where a baron lived and where your father-in-law lived, Morty, in the old cliffs. They hear more of the home. 1 second. I just want to get to the one. Here. Here we are. And who? What do you see on the wall? Reb Aaron Cutler and Reb Schneer Cutler. And there's the grandson sitting underneath. I pass these back to Morty. You can keep whatever you want, but show them to your better half. Tanayin Hara. That's your heritage. Here are articles dealing with homosexuality, with genes, with the whole question whether the genes determine it. Very interesting. Research continues full go. Here, anyone here from Toronto, it's unbelievable. Here is a reform shul, and they're now davening in a church, and they cover up the crucifix when they daven on Shabbos. What's fascinating is the rabbi of the Reform Shul is a woman. The minister of the church is also a woman. We're going to reach a time where non-Orthodox shuls will only allow women in. They will not allow men in. There'll be total separation of sexes. This is the vaccination problem in New York. They're now telling kids, if you're not vaccinated, you can't go to shul, can't go to school. This is a beautiful article of how the biggest conservative temple in the world, the Brooklyn Jewish Center, today is Chabad, and you gotta give the Brooklyn Jewish Center Board of Trustees credit. They took an offer from Chabad of $400,000 instead of $6 million that a builder offered them. Here is all the great things happening in Israel. It makes you so proud. Here is the interview that has shaken up the world with Aaron Cutler, whose picture you just saw, that Shlomo Lekalbach was not kicked out of Lakewood. I can testify to that. Does anyone want this? This is an article on Torah Umesora, written by someone working there, a very well-balanced article, how it began, how it developed. Here is Chabad, and a whole story, once again, the Rebbe and giving advice to humans. Here is an article just appeared in the latest tradition on Chevron, the massacre 190 years ago, and about a boy from Memphis who was killed in the massacre. That's, and 1 second, am I finished yet? No? Anyone wants this issue of Ignite, where I'm interviewed, plenty of mistakes, but I come across as I really am. Page 42. And finally, you won't believe this. Ellie, come back to see this. This is Borough Park, 13th Avenue. Can you see it or not? I took the picture this summer. Tremendous sign up, Cherem Chamua, Nuchem Eber. It's almost 10 years. Give a get. Okay? So, I mean, this is worth everything. At least they're trying. Till we meet again in... Oh, this is... Anyone here a lawyer? Prenuptial agreement, a Chabad overview of all the various agreements. With a typical Chabad outcome, do as you wish. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'Tamya. Hi, Chaim, are you going to be able to come regularly? Where do you stand?
Till Sukkot.
Till Sukkot, all right. That's also something. We missed two people today. Ah.
Kevin, my wife is waiting for me downstairs, but at any point, could we sit down or something? I want to hear about Rav Goren. I read the book, of course, this year. I want to hear. Or are there recorded ones that I should have?
I have to check whether it's in the volume I gave you or volume 3. I have the whole thing on the Langer case.
Okay.
So come to my office tomorrow morning. We'll check it.
Where's your office? Is it no?
Where you need an umbrella. The leak?
I'm new here.
My office is around... Chaim, do me a favor. Show Ellie where my office is.
Okay.
Now I'm going down to Sherry. Okay. Do me a favor. From the office, go tell Sherry I'm coming down. I need her help for a few minutes.
Okay.
Sure. Tell her very important.
This is Kalmanitz. Just stay with that right out there.
Wow.
It looks like it's frozen in time. And here's a picture of the issue. We were standing on this above this field, and then he says to us, and there's the yeshiva building. It's right across the way. Oh. Here's the yeshiva, just the red roof. We were at Volozhin, we were in Rosin.
I have a whole book about Volozhin and the picture.
We were at Brisk. But some of the places look like, if you could just close your eyes, like the shtetl might have looked, 150 years ago.
No, I know that. I can tell you, I was in Russia in the 1980s 3 times. Believe me, I saw Minsk in 1981. It was 1781.
We were at the OL of the Svasemnes on the ridge.
That's on the other
Reb
side.
Chaim, we went to
Reb Chaim is in Warsaw.
Yeah, we were
next to the Mitziv.
No, we were in Reb Chaim. We were in Chaim Volozhin.
Reb Chaim Volozhin.
Yeah.
Hey, Vanti.
Okay, so looking forward to the 26th Beit Shemesh, Mitzvah Shem.
Right.
Okay, so two little things. The format of the shiur generally is a Ian with Mar Makomo. So here's my question to you. I got the title, I was the one I had to put in the flyer somewhere.
I'm not saying you, but
you sort of your Madin and why you history. How does that fit to
I'm being Shuvah, correcting some of the stories.
Oh, it's your Shuvah before your Madin and the history. Yeah. Okay, that wasn't clear to me. Okay.
So play with it as you want.
Okay, fine. Okay.
You can add another the importance of Torah history.
All the other
as we learn from the Mustafa of Rosh Hashanah. I'm going to play with that at the end.
That's interesting.
But I'm not going to spend time in it. I'm going to spend time only on the book, only on the history.
Okay.
I'm not there to give them a message.
Can you do a little bit on the beginning of the book? Like something in the Kedushin area? Because I found something fascinating. No.
Zelichud or Zelichud. I can't do a striptease. I want to do what I want to do in depth.
Okay.
I have a lot to say. I mean, what I have to say, you can take some of the topics and speak for a year. It's very important. Otherwise, you just look at the pictures and you think, all right, what are these pictures? We'll deal with the picture of the Rosh Yeshiva in 1944. That's a major, major, major. No, what you're dealing with is my shirm from here, right? The shirm is fascinating.
No, I know, but I'm saying, I started reading the book already.
The person writing up the shirm loves Eben Ezra. I told him, why don't you write up some of the work I did in Chashid Mishpat, Chayim, Yoredeya, he's an Eben Ezra. So all right, I can't say a word. He's doing me a favor because he's right. Well, what you're reading is my version afterwards. He's a PhD from MIT, and he only works in Princeton. He's a genius of geniuses. But his ability in writing English, I told him, he would have been. I had Mazel Chaim Potter come there and write.
Wow.
Chaim Potter and I, we grew up together, number one. Number two, they always have me talk with the great grandchildren of the family because I yet knew the great grandparents of them today. But Chaim Potter was editor of JPS. He's the one who took me over once they gave me the contract.
That's when you came here.
No. We're talking 67.
Okay.
68 maybe, the latest, they can't be later. That's how I got here, Chris.
That's the part I remember. You got here and you were...
I got here because when I applied at the Jewish agency, they said, rabbis, they sweep streets in Jerusalem. Doctorate in Jewish history, they're in the zoo. Taka Tova's cousin was the head of the zoo in Tel Aviv, Levitt. So he had a PhD, Dafka, but he was the head of the zoo. So, but I filled the form. They saw I had a contract with JPS. That was like saying I had a contract today with Harper Brothers. It was very fair. So when it arrived at this end, they told me what happened was my sister-in-law was working in the department. They gave it around to the publishers, and the encyclopedia had just gone public. It had been until then a government project. They sold it off to a consortium from Australia, which later becomes Keter Publishing. And now that it's private, they want to make money. So they needed people. So now they find the person who knows something, and he has a contract. So they came to America, and they offered me the contract on Tynus Esther 69, and I signed them for the next day. And I have to be honest, at the end of 1 month working here, they ripped up the contract and gave me a 200 lira raise. Very, very nice. When 2 years later, when the exhibit came out, they offered me a real 2,000 lira a month to become a staff editor, to be part of the editorial board. But I had to go back to teaching. I starved. It was a different 2,000 lira would be like today someone telling you a contract of 20,000 shekel a month. Would you follow? That is real money. But I had to go back to myself. Are we still going here? Yeah, 1 second. All right, yeah, what else did you want to ask me?
No, that's fine. Now you explained the time. Now I understand how